How are you guys doing out there in L.A. land? It's great to be with you. Busy time in my life, a busy time in Dr. Wickman's life, but we are taking time out of our busy lives to be with you live here on KKLA. We're in, is it Glendale?
I think so.
We're in Glendale. I don't know where we are, but we're here. So, and Gilbert's here with us. He's doing our engineering. You always do a great job. Word on the street is we might be missing you soon. And I will miss you. And no, we're live on KKLA. This is apologetics.com radio, where we challenge believers to think and thinkers to believe. My name is Jonathan Noyes. I'm just a local pastor. I'm really nobody, but I have a lot of fun on the air, and I love to challenge ideas and people's beliefs. And the third week of every month, if you listen to us regularly, you'll know that this is Science Night, and Dr. Leslie Wickman is live with me here in the studio. Now, let me get the telephone number out before we dig in here. If you want to call us with any question in the area of apologetics, of course, yes, but theology, philosophy, and tonight especially science, make sure you give us a call here at 888-995-KKLA. That's 888-995-5552, and that's a lot of fives. And tonight's show, every third week of the month, is sponsored by the American Scientific Affiliation,
right?
An organization in which Dr. Wickman, you are the
executive director
of. So, would you be able to tell us just a little bit about what you
guys
are doing?
Yeah, absolutely. The ASA is an organization of Christians who are either involved in the sciences or simply interested in the sciences. And promotes the dialogue between science and theology. One of the things that we do annually is a summer conference, and our last conference was in July in Boston at Gordon College, but we're now gearing up for our 2019 conference, which is going to be held at Wheaton College near Chicago, July 19th through 22nd, 2019. And we're really excited about that. You can find out more information about the organization at large at www.asa3.org. ASA actually sponsors, as John was saying, this monthly show on science and faith. And again, we're really excited about the upcoming conference in July. The theme is exploring creation. And we've got some awesome plenary speakers lined up already.
Do you have any names that you could give us right now?
I do, actually, yeah. So the first of the plenary speakers is Jerry Gabriels. I'm not sure I'm pronouncing that name
correctly.
Sounds
good to me. Don't ever doubt yourself, Dr. Wickman. You got this.
But he's the founding director of the Center for Fundamental Physics at Low Energies, as well as a board of trustees, professor of physics at Northwestern University.
Whoa.
So, you know, he's got some real cred.
That's a smart dude right there.
Exactly. And then the next plenary speaker is Deb Harzma. She's the president of BioLogos. She's also an astrophysicist and former professor and chair of physics and astronomy at Calvin College. So she's got some pretty good academic chops as well.
Yeah, absolutely. She knows what she's talking about, too.
Yep, exactly. And the next confirmed plenary speaker is Jennifer McNutt. She's associate professor of theology and history of Christianity at Wheaton.
Nice.
And she's also a fellow of the Royal Historical Society. So
that's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting.
That's awesome. So she's actually going to come from a theological
exactly,
perspective.
Exactly.
I love that at Wheaton too. And Wheaton's a solid school.
Yeah, absolutely. So and then we have another confirmed speaker in Ken Miller, who you might recognize that name.
He's
a professor of biology and Royce Family Professor for Teaching Excellence at Brown University. And he's also the author of a biology textbook that is widely used. And also, you may recognize his name as the author of Finding Darwin's God.
Yeah. You're telling me there's a Christian teacher at Brown.
Yeah.
The Brown in Providence,
yeah.
The Ivy League.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So anyway, again, these people are no slouches, right?
I mean, yeah, absolutely.
They really bring a lot to the table. And then we also have James Shirley, who's founder and director of Asymmetrics, which develops and markets technologies in stem cell medicine.
Oh, my goodness.
He's MD and PhD from John Hopkins University School of Medicine. Yeah. So again, you know,
the list goes on and on and on.
And we've got one more confirmed plenary speaker in Gail Woloschak. She is professor of radiation oncology, radiology, and cell molecular biology at the Feinberg School of Medicine at Northwestern University.
Oh, my goodness.
So she's an expert also in bionanotechnology.
So basically what you're saying, Dr. Wickman, is that every single person who's listening right now live on KKLA, you need to go to ASA3.org.
Yeah.
And can they sign up right now to get to this conference?
Registration is not open yet, but definitely go bookmark.
It's a teaser.
Yeah, exactly. Go bookmark the page, check it out, join the ASA. There's all kinds
Absolutely.
Of different levels of membership that you can join our organization. And also, one of the benefits of membership is we have a quarterly journal that comes out per Perspectives on Science and Christian Faith that is a scholarly peer-reviewed journal that has all kinds of articles 4 times a year on topics in science and theology.
Yeah, and just saying from experience that I've looked over the page fairly in depth now. I mean, we've been co-hosting this show for months now.
A year,
almost
actually.
A year this month, actually, or next month, probably December. I don't remember when.
I think we started last September, so I think it's been over a year.
More than
now,
a year. Time flies.
Yeah.
And so I've looked at the site a lot, and there's so much good content there.
Yeah.
And not only that, but the journals. And I love the fact that you have access to previous journals online as
well.
Yeah. So it's if you guys are looking for all things science, anything to do with Christianity and science, faith and science, you want to go to ASA3.org.
Exactly.
And check it out. I love that you said bookmark the page, because then set a reminder to sign up for the conference.
Exactly.
Because they won't be disappointed.
Yeah, exactly. And even on the page, you can actually see video recordings of plenaries from last year's meeting as well as years in the past. So last year, in fact, one of our plenaries was Francis Collins, head of the National Institutes of Health.
Yeah, he's been around.
Yeah.
He knows his stuff.
Exactly. So
I stole something from him like 3 or 4 weeks ago in the pulpit.
Is that right?
I stole an illustration that he uses.
Awesome.
Yeah. And you guys gotta check this conference out. And if you can't get there, we understand that. Chicago in July is beautiful though. And even so, you gotta check out the webpage. ASA3.org.
Absolutely.
And Dr. Wickman, I am super, super excited to be talking about the topic that we have at hand.
Awesome.
Mainly because, you kind of know what you're talking about here. This is kind of your thing. We're going to be talking about God and Big Bang cosmology. And I say that you know your stuff here because I think you've written a book on this.
I have.
And I would love to say if the first three callers who call in tonight, I will give them your book for free.
Awesome.
So Wilbert, you'll have to take their information down. He's giving me a thumbs up.
Sweet.
And we're going to get you the book, God of the Big Bang, How Modern Science Affirms the Creator.
Yeah, absolutely.
I love that title. We'll get you a copy of that book if you are one of the first three callers who call us here live at KKLA's apologetics.com radio. That's 888-995-KKLA, 888-995-5552. We want to get this book in your hands. Because, we're going to talk a little bit about it, but then you'll be able to actually read really in depth of what we are talking about. So I actually, just to start off the conversation, it's not in our notes, so I hope I'm not throwing it off too far, but I love the title of your book,
Thanks.
To be honest with you, God of the Big Bang, and especially the subtitle, How Modern Science Affirms the Creator.
Yeah,
I think that that's something that's overlooked oftentimes. I think Christians in general, we tend to kind of shy away from the scientific topics.
Yeah.
We think scientists have our number, yet you're saying here that you think science actually confirms our belief.
Absolutely.
And
So just to give you a little background on the idea for the book and kind of the impetus for the book, a few years back, I was teaching astronomy at Azusa Pacific University, and there was big news in the astronomy world about possible evidence for gravity waves. And so I was approached by the PR office at Azusa Pacific to talk to some media people to give a Christian perspective on this news about possible evidence for gravity waves. And so, so gravity waves, by the way, are something that Einstein predicted. And, you know, so we've been looking for gravity waves for a long time, and there's actually been more evidence that's come out even more recently that is looking like we're getting more substantial evidence for that. So in any case, I talked to a few reporters and whatnot, and eventually it led to an opportunity to write an op-ed article for CNN's website. And so the CNN editor actually titled that piece very provocatively.
Well, of course.
Yes, of course, to get attention, right? Yeah, so the title was, "Does Big Bang Breakthrough Offer Proof of God?" Which actually made me a little uncomfortable because I'm super careful with that word proof, both as a scientist as well as a Christian.
Yeah.
I think we need to be really careful with that word.
Why? Can I ask that?
Yeah, please.
We'll probably never get to the topic
at
hand,
right?
But so why is the word proof important?
Yeah, so both from a, let me start from the science perspective. Because of the fact that the scientific method is an inductive process as opposed to a deductive process, we have to use that word proof carefully, because the inductive method of science basically looks for the best explanation given the evidence that we have so far. Okay, so that's an inductive approach, right? We're saying, okay, the best explanation given the evidence that we have so far would be thus and so. So that's our theory.
And that thus and so can be God.
I mean, you have to be a little bit careful there with that connection too, just because science deals primarily with the physical world, right?
Uh-huh.
So, but we can still say there's evidence for God. And I believe that the best explanation for all the scientific evidence that we have is that we have a creative designer behind all this. But we're getting ahead of ourselves.
Okay, sorry.
So
proof.
For the whole idea with proof, you know, like I say, if we're saying that science is inductive and we're looking for the best explanation given the evidence we have to kind of be open minded about new evidence that could come along that would kind of switch the paradigm.
Yeah.
So for example, I mean, if we look at historical science, this is the way science progresses, right? Before the Renaissance, we basically thought that the sun went around the earth. And that was kind of the prevailing model, right? And then when Galileo came along with his telescope and started collecting evidence that, you know, a better explanation given the evidence that we have is that the earth actually goes around the sun, then we had to kind of rethink all that, right? But it turned what we thought we knew in terms of the prevailing paradigm or model for the cosmos on its head, right? So that was a big paradigm shift.
And, yeah.
But science has to be open to that. You know, new evidence comes in that can refine our model or drastically change it.
Yeah.
And so, again, like I said, we have to be really careful with this idea of proof from the scientific standpoint, because it's a tentative thing. You know, we have good evidence for something,
okay,
right? And then similarly, from a Christian perspective, a faith perspective, you know, we have to be, you know, acknowledge that free will is a big part of God's plan for humanity. And so if we actually were able to say, you know what, we have an open and shut proven case for God, then what does that do to free will and faith? Because free will and faith are such a vital part of God's plan for humanity. People have to be free to choose whether to follow God or not, or to even believe that God exists. And so, like I say, from that standpoint too, I'm really careful with that word proof.
So would you, another question here. So proof, what's the difference between proof and evidence?
Right. So to me, proof is kind of an open and shut case that says, oh, there's no two ways about this. You know, it's an open and shut black and white case. You know, there's no argument. There's no even discussion about this.
Yeah.
And so, like I said, I'm much more comfortable saying, let's take a look at the evidence.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. That's interesting, because when I think proof, I think math.
Oh yeah, sure. Exactly. That's a great example.
Yeah.
Math is deductive.
Yeah.
right? Logic is deductive. Math is deductive. And so you can talk about proofs in math and logic because they're deductive.
That's right.
Right, which is opposed to science, which is inductive.
Inductive. So they're different disciplines. Exactly. And they require different things.
Exactly. Exactly. And so, but in any case, back to the CNN article, you know, that it went viral, I think, in large part because it did contain this very provocative title saying, you know, does Big Bang Breakthrough offer proof of God?
Yeah.
So that it was over 500,000 views in less than a week.
Well, that's good for you.
Yeah, it turned out that it was very good, actually, because then it led to a book contract.
Yeah.
Which was this, you know, God of the Big Bang. And you know, and when a book publisher comes knocking on your door, you typically don't turn them down because that doesn't happen too often.
Not a ton of questions are asked. Yes. Okay. When it's do you want to buy?
Exactly. And they're like, can you write a book on this in 4 months? So I'm like, okay, sure.
That's really awesome. It's so cool. And like I said, at the top of the show, guys, if you want to call us at 888-995-5552. And you want to offer a question or something, I'd love to get you Dr. Wickman's book for free. And all you need to do is give your information to Wilbert and we'll make sure we get out to you. And we have a caller already. So it's our friend Glenn. I'm not sure if Leslie has met Glenn. Let's go to Glenn in Canada. Glenn, are you with us?
I'm with you, man. How you doing over there?
Oh, man. Better than I deserve. So it's a good night to be alive. And I'm here in studio with Dr. Leslie Wickman. And I don't know if you normally call on this night, Glenn.
No, I usually don't. No, it worked out well. No hockey tonight.
Nice.
A little bit of time to call.
That's awesome, man. So Leslie, Glenn is a frequent caller of the show. He's would you characterize yourself as an atheist?
Yeah, I'm happy to wear that label.
Okay, so he proudly wears the hat of atheist. He's from Canada, our sister country up north. I was just with another fellow Canuck. At a conference I was just at earlier today, actually.
Wow.
So I was with Tim Barnett of Stand to Reason fame, and he's on the other side of Canada, though. He's all the way on the East Coast.
Glenn, it's nice to meet you.
Yeah. So Glenn, what do you got for us? Well, you just want the free book, huh? I know you.
Well, I always want the free book.
Yeah. Did you get the other one I sent you?
You know what? I'm sure it's on its way, but we're actually experiencing a postal strike in Canada at the moment.
Oh, so, man.
I don't know when it will be delivered, but I have confidence that it has been sent.
All right, I'll check my Amazon account too to make sure that.
Wait. Canadians go on strike? I thought they were far too polite for that.
Oh, we're super polite about it.
It's a polite strike. Yeah. So what do you got for us, Glenn?
My question. So, congratulations on your book. That sounds fantastic.
Thank you.
I'm looking forward to reading that. So I had two questions. One about the book, and then one just kind of picking your brain about what I see as the kind of the state of affairs. And then this is just anecdotally. So I'm wondering what you would think. It seems to me that the more empirical the sciences get, the fewer people of any particular faith you find in those fields. And that the majority of scientists who study these kind of things, you know, cosmology and whatnot, are not convinced by that same evidence that a God is the designer. So I just wondered if you could comment on that.
Yeah, you know, go ahead. Sorry. If you want to put both of them out there first.
I won't pile on. It's not fair.
Okay. Yeah, actually, it's interesting that you bring that up because a recent study by Elaine Eklund from Rice University indicates that somewhere in the vicinity of 61% of American scientists self-identify as Christian. And it's kind of interesting because the ones that are in what we term the hard sciences are actually more convinced by the empirical evidence than the ones that are in the fuzzier sciences. So you actually see there's kind of a spectrum where the people that are in physics and, you know, astronomy and chemistry and whatnot are more convinced than the people that are over in the more social sciences by the evidence. So it's kind of interesting that way. a lot of it is because of, I'm sure you're familiar with the anthropic principle and the fine-tuning argument and whatnot, which is actually on our agenda to talk about tonight.
Next month.
we may not get to it, but yeah, because of the long list of finely tuned characteristics within the universe that have to be just exactly what they are in order to get life anywhere. Most of the kind of physical sciences, physical scientists, I should say, find that evidence pretty compelling. And, you know, of course, there are the people that go down the road of, well, you know, maybe there's a multiverse. And that's something else that we were hoping to talk about later tonight or next month.
It does answer some neat questions for us. But so my first comment would be, please, if you could, in an email, maybe link me that. I love to be corrected because I don't have to be wrong in the same way more than once.
I will. It's Elaine Howard Eklund of Rice University, and this study was actually reported on in Christianity Today. But I can send you that link if I can get your contact information.
I have it. Yeah.
Okay, terrific.
They have it. That'd be wonderful. Thank you. My second question was. Just was about the book itself, you know, how it's being received and what are kind of some of the stronger criticisms and what are the stronger things in support? Like who's saying wonderful things? What are the critics saying? And
everybody loves it, Glenn. There hasn't been one criticism.
No. actually, it's been well received. If you go on Amazon, you can kind of check it out and look at the reviews and whatnot. But I think it's still got at least 4 out of 5 stars. And so it's been well received. It's interesting. It's always an interesting experience when you kind of put your thoughts out there, right? You become a bit of a lightning rod in a sense. And the same thing happened with the CNN article. You get, I would say that roughly 90% of the mail and the comments that I got were positive that, you know, this is very helpful. Thanks for writing this. And another, probably at least 5% were out and out haters and you know, haters going to hate. So what are you going to do? You know, there's always, but you know, I mean, you know, people that would just say, that didn't actually have any strong arguments against it, but just were saying things like, you know, just shut up. Don't write anything further type of thing.
Okay. Well, if I do a review of it, I promise not to start with that particular phrase.
Yeah, I
look forward to it. Yeah,
I'm looking at the reviews right now, and there's 4.5. You got 4.5 stars actually, which
awesome.
Is which is pretty decent. So, what were you going to say, Glenn? I'm sorry, I cut you off.
Nothing. I'm just going to say that I look forward to that, and it's been a pleasure meeting you. And I can't wait to hear the rest of the show.
Yeah, well, I'll look forward to talking to you again sometime.
Hey, thanks for giving us a call, Glenn. It's good to hear your voice, man.
Absolutely, bye.
All right,
take care.
And I actually love the question that he asked because this is something that's it kind of can lead us into our conversation, Leslie, but it's also something that I used to throw in people's faces as an atheist, and now it's oftentimes thrown in my face, especially by people who are in the field or in science, I should say, and specifically biologists. I'm friends with a number of people who are in academia as mm-hmm. biologists, and they would tell me that the majority of their colleagues are atheists. And when they say that, I always ask the clarifying question, well, who are your colleagues?
Right.
Majority of biologists or majority of scientists? Because there's a difference there.
There is a difference, yeah. And actually, it's this kind of sliding scale all the way from the hard physical scientists are the ones that, again, they're kind of up close and personal with this fine-tuning in the universe. And it's hard to ignore that evidence.
Yeah. And just for our listeners who might not know, what do you mean by hard sciences?
Yeah, so I'm talking, you know, physics, chemistry, astrophysics, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, okay.
And then from there, you know, you go from the physical scientists at the far end of the hard science spectrum, and then you kind of move over into the life sciences, which is, you know, biology, pretty much.
Yeah.
And it is interesting. Like I say, it's a sliding scale from the physical sciences to the life sciences to then you've got the kind of the softer sciences like the, you know, psychology and sociology on the other end. And as you move across that scale, you go from more theists to fewer theists in the softer sciences.
Yeah.
And I mean, one way to look at it is, again, like I say, the physical sciences are face-to-face with the hard physical evidence of the fine-tuning of the universe and how all these physical constants have to be exactly what they are, or life doesn't happen.
Yeah, awesome. So let's dig into that a little bit now, because I think it kind of gets us on our topic. Because tonight we wanted to really talk about, you know, God and the Big Bang, and Big Bang cosmology specifically. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we're talking specifically about an area of study. So I'm just going to let you kind of introduce this topic for our listeners.
Right. So I guess I'd like to start with the idea that there are three views of how science and faith relate to each other. And those three views are conflict, independence, and integration, right? So generally that kind of captures the position of most people in terms of looking at how they relate to each other. So if we can start by talking a little bit about the conflict view, it's the idea that science and faith are always and forever in conflict. It may be characterized, at least in part, by fear and confusion. And typically, science or faith is given more respect by whoever the observer is.
Yeah, and that's actually a good point, because you're not just talking about Christians here. You're talking about across the board. Like, there's a view that some Christians hold that science and faith are not they're not linked. They can't be integrated.
Right.
But there's also scientists out there that think, you know, faith and science, or I guess belief in God, can't be reconciled with a scientific view. And this is the conflict
exactly. view. And it's really prevalent in our culture and epitomized by Bill Nye the Science Guy and Ken Ham from Answers in Genesis bashing heads over this. We see these debates all the time, and that's kind of how people in this conflict view see that whole dialogue between science and faith is one of conflict.
That's really interesting. And guys, we're coming up to our half hour break. I can't believe it. This has been the fastest half hour ever. So you're listening to John Noyes, Leslie Wickman in studio at Science Night here at apologetics.com radio. We are going to be right back as we talk all things cosmology. So stay tuned.
In this farewell, there's no blood.
The mission of apologetics.com is to challenge believers to think and thinkers to believe on the radio, on the internet, and now in the Life of the Mind conferences. If you believe in the work that apologetics.com is doing, we encourage you to support us with your prayers and also with your tax-deductible gift so that this ministry will continue on the air, on the web, and in events near you. Gifts of any amount are appreciated, and it's very simple to participate. Just go to apologetics.com and click donate. It's safe and secure. Or you can send your check or money order to apologetics.com, 1900 Southwestern Avenue, San Pedro, California, 90732. Thank you for supporting apologetics.com.
All right, let's get back to the apologetics.com radio show.
Yeah, a little Green Day, that'll wake you up. I miss Green Day, Wilbur. I bet you they're still playing. We could probably find them. Yeah, would you go to a show with me if let's do it. Let's get some tickets. If you're listening live on KKLA right now and you want to take Wilbert and I and Leslie, if she'd like to go to a Green Day concert, feel free to give us a call. And in the process, I'll give you a free book because tonight we are in studio with Dr. Leslie Wickman. It's the third week of the month and it's Science Night here on apologetics.com radio. And if you'd like to call in, we are live here in Glendale. We're willing to field your questions, especially in the areas of science. You can give us a call at 888-995-5552. If you're scared of all those fives, just think of it like this, 888-995-KKLA. And I'd be happy if you do call and you have a question for us, I'd love to get you a copy of Dr. Wickman's book for you to, but you got to read it. You can't just get it. You got to read it. It's called God of the Big Bang. And it's a wonderful book. It's got 4.5 stars on Amazon. And I'd love to get that to you. And actually, Dr. Wickman, you are the executive director of the ASA, American Scientific Affiliation.
Right.
And everybody needs to visit your website.
Yes.
Your website is?
ASA3.org. So ASA3.org.
Yeah. And what will they find if they go there?
Yeah, there's tons of resources on science and theology. I encourage you to go to the website, join us. There's all kinds of different options for membership, all the way from friend or follower on up to a regular member. There's student memberships. In fact, student members are memberships are free as long as you're still a student, whether that's high school, college, or graduate school.
Yeah.
So please check that out. The other thing that we're really promoting right now is our annual meeting that's coming up in July, July 19th through 22nd. In Chicago, at Wheaton College near Chicago. And we've got some great plenaries lined up. We're really, really excited. The theme is exploring creation. You'll find information on the website about that upcoming meeting, as well as last year's meeting and video recordings of our plenaries from last year. Lots and lots of
tons of resources. And I've poked around quite a bit, and it's just been a pleasure getting to know you, Dr. Wickman, because I've come to know that the ASA is now one of my go-to resources whenever I'm dealing with
awesome.
God and science.
Awesome.
So I recommend that to our listening audience, ASA, the number three, ASA3.org, and that'll get you there. And then make sure you keep checking back, because registration for that conference out in Wheaton is not available yet. It's not
right.
open, but it will be. And
yeah.
when it is, you want to make sure that you get in, get in early,
because
space will be limited. So
yep.
you want to make sure you get in. And Noah, we're gonna start off with a phone call. Is that okay?
Yeah.
All right. Dr. Wickman says it's okay.
Yep.
So if the doctor says, that means we can do it. And we've got Claudia here. And Claudia, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
Claudia, I thank you so much for hanging in there. You held through the break and everything, and I hope we can actually offer you some information. It looks like on my screen here you have a question possibly about some stem cell research. So fire away, Claudia.
Yes, I've been praying about this for the last 6 months, about how to fix body parts on my body. I'm going to be 70 in a couple of days. And there's
happy birthday.
Yeah.
Thank you. I was scared to say 70.
You don't sound a day older than like 28.
Exactly.
And I've needed body parts. I've told my grandkids for the last 25 years that I needed some body parts, and it just didn't seem right to operate.
Yeah.
And this is like an answer to a prayer. And I just don't know that much about it. And I also am going to start home teaching my grandkids. And your book just sounds like something to teach them. Even though they're young, I can break
yeah,
it down.
Absolutely. I mean, I wrote it for a lay audience, so it's actually really accessible. You don't have to be a scientist or a science major to understand it. So I think it's really accessible for kids too.
Yeah. And so Claudia, are you looking for some advice as far as like stem cells? Like what exactly are you looking for us?
Yes. I'm trying to decide how to fix my knees, and I promised my daughter and my grandchildren that I would not operate if I could find something else.
Hmm.
And, this is, I was asleep. I'm sorry. I was sound asleep and the radio was on. And to me, it's just like an answer to a question.
Sure. No. How about this? Yeah. We'll do our best to get you some information about stem cells. But also, I think Dr. Wickman might just be able to give you information because you're an athlete.
Yeah.
So you know
true
injuries.
Enough.
You know what it's like when body parts start
yeah.
hurting.
In fact, yeah, I've had three knee surgeries myself. So.
Well, oh my gosh.
Oh, well, good one. Yes. So I knew when I woke up in the middle of the night.
Well. My knee doctor basically says, and this is definitely not my field, so, you know, take it for what it's worth, but the stem cell injections and whatnot for joints, I think, is still fairly experimental. It certainly might work in certain cases in certain individuals. And the nice thing now about stem cells is you don't have to get them from fetuses. I mean, you can get adult stem cells from your own body, in fact, that can be cultured. So,
and I think that's an important concern, like on my mind, is that's the question I'd be asking my doctors.
Yeah.
Are these adult stem cells, or are they coming from, a fetus?
Well, and the nice thing about stem cells that can be cultured from your own body is that you don't have the risk of rejection either. I would encourage you to look into that and explore it more with your own doctor. But again, it's still fairly experimental in terms of how much good it does in joints. But check it out.
Check it out. Claudia, does that help you at all?
Yes, and it also about your book. I'm sorry, I can't think as well as I normally do, but since I have been asleep and I've only been awake for about 10 minutes.
No worries.
You're an honest woman, Claudia.
I'm so excited. So, I don't know.
Yeah.
If that helps about your book, I can't wait to read it.
Great.
I've never read anything like that in my life, but it's like you're a gift from God.
Oh, thanks. I'm praying about this. Well, the other thing, too, that we should mention is that I absolutely love to come out and speak with church groups or even schools and things like that. So if there's an opportunity in your church world or even in one of the schools that you're acquainted with, I'd be happy to do that, and not just for you, but anybody in the listening audience. So,
yeah, you know what comes to my mind, Claudia, is I'm listening. So we do a part-time homeschool with my girls, and if you're doing homeschooling with your kids, you're probably part of a larger group, and mm-hmm. maybe getting Dr. Wickman out to speak to that larger group might be kind of fun.
Yeah.
This sounds wonderful, and I go to 3 churches. I'm very close to all 3.
Awesome.
Nice.
People think I'm weird, but I need God so much. I mean, I need him every 3 hours. I get an injection from the Bible, if that makes any sense.
I love
it. He's my judge of choice. I don't know.
I love it. Hey, Claudia, thank you so much for calling in. It was great to hear your voice. And hey, good luck with your knees. I'd love to hear a follow-up as you do your research and stuff. Feel free to call us some other, what's today? Is it Saturday or is it Friday?
Saturday.
It's Saturday, technically, but to me, it's still Friday. I haven't gone to sleep like Claudia yet. So I'm going to let you go, Claudia, and we're going to continue this conversation, but keep us updated, okay?
Thank you so much.
Yeah,
thank you
for calling.
So much. And we'll get you that book out in the next week or so. So have a great night. And it's I love it when we can field calls like that and add a little bit of a pastoral component almost, help some folks out with some
absolutely.
Issues. And the stem cell stuff is something that's near and dear to my heart because I'm a huge anti-abortion guy.
Right, absolutely.
And if you're harvesting cells from fetuses, I'd say you got to run from that. That's not an option for us as Christians. But there have been major breakthroughs.
Yes. Absolutely.
And actually, that's one of the myths, and just this last statement, then we can get on back to the topic. But one of the myths I've found out there is that you can't use adult stem cells. You have to use, stuff from the fetus, from aborted fetuses. And that just ain't true anymore.
Right, exactly.
So praise the Lord for breakthroughs in science,
absolutely.
So before we took a call, right before we went to break, we were talking about 3 different views of science and faith and how they interrelate or they don't relate at all as our first model, which is called conflict mm-hmm. model. States. And then I think we fairly well define that just saying basically there's those 2 things, belief in God and science are completely incompatible. They cannot go together, oil and water.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the next of the 3 views of science?
Right. So the next one would be independence. And that's really characterized by tolerance and separate paths, or as Stephen Jay Gould used to say, noma, or non-overlapping magisteria, to describe completely separate areas of inquiry. So they really didn't have anything to even say to each other, or didn't talk a common language, didn't talk about common ground, and just completely independent, that you kind of almost partition your mind. So this part deals with science and that part deals with faith.
Yeah. And that's, as far as I understand it, the more modern approach too, because you know, came with the, you know, a shift in thought where we put things in the upper story, lower story. Francis Schaeffer went over this in, you know, the 60s and the 70s, where, you know, things in the upper story having to do with, you know, postmodernism, you can't really know truth, and these things are religious facts. The lower story is science, and it's completely independent of the upper story. Mm-hmm. And these are the things that we can really know.
Yeah.
And what's the third?
The third view would be integration. And that's characterized by cooperation, engagement, and dialogue between the two fields. And so that's really the position that the American Scientific Affiliation takes. And that, like I said, is one of dialogue. And what do the two sides have to say to each other? What do the two disciplines have to contribute to the conversation?
Yeah, absolutely.
Exactly.
I think it's important also if, for you guys listening, you know, for me at least, you know, coming from an atheistic perspective, when I was an atheist and now I'm a Christian, it's important to state that I don't believe what I believe because it's, you know, makes me feel good. I don't believe because it got me more friends. It certainly didn't. Right. It didn't make me more popular with my family. I can right. guarantee you that. But I believe what I believe because it's true.
Exactly.
And when I say that it's true, I say that it accurately reflects reality, the yeah. way things really are, all of reality.
Yeah.
And that includes the sciences, that exactly. includes the world around us.
Exactly.
And so as Christians, we shouldn't be afraid of this integration, you know, model
right.
where science and faith or science and belief in God can walk hand in hand yeah. in certain instances.
Yeah.
Oftentimes, I think our Christian worldview offers to us, opens up at least, solutions to issues that,
yeah.
or I guess answers
yeah.
to questions.
Yeah, and in fact, one way of looking at this integration view too is it goes way back to Francis Bacon and Galileo, who both talked about, and other scientists have talked about, this kind of two books model of God's revelation and how God has revealed himself through scripture on the one hand and through creation on the other.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so if those two books are both authored by the same God, then they should correspond to each other. They should integrate. They should go hand in hand, right? And we have nothing to fear. And that's, for me, that's part of my story, is as a kid, just hearing people talk about, you know, science and faith being completely divorced from each other. It just didn't make sense. If God is the author of both scripture as well as the author of creation,
that's right.
then how can one contradict the other? It just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, it's God's, you know, general revelation that we see around
exactly.
us in the world. I mean, when we look at the world around us, it cries out the glory of God.
Exactly.
You know, the heavens declare the glory of
exactly.
God. The skies proclaim his handiwork.
Yeah.
You know, and I think it's important for us as Christians to not turn a blind eye to science and actually dig in. We don't need to run from these things.
Yeah.
We need to be moving into these fields, because I think we do live in a world of integration, like what we're saying, where
yeah.
if God is real, right? If our worldview is true,
right,
it should be able to hold fast to the tests
exactly.
that science throws at.
Right. Of any discipline that comes along, right? So
that's right.
So yeah, and that this idea of conflict is just an illusion.
Yeah, and could you explain that just a little bit for me? Like, what do you mean the idea of conflict is an illusion?
Right. So I think that people, you know, we don't have to tell anybody, this is not a news flash. We live in a very polarized society.
Oh my gosh, it seems like it's getting more and more
polarized. That's exactly right. And so you've got, you know, people that would subscribe to scientism on the one hand, which is kind of this very fundamentalist belief in science, that science has got all the answers, and that you put that natural science together with a secular worldview and this idea of godless evolution on the one hand, and that science offers a complete explanation for everything that is.
Yeah. Which is a stretch.
Right, exactly. Absolutely. And again, we call it scientism because it's a fundamentalist belief in science, a yeah. confidence, a trust in science. And on the other hand,
faith.
Well, yeah, exactly. Exactly. And so you've got these kind of polarized, extreme fundamentalist positions where you've got scientism on the one hand, and then you would have a very fundamentalist religious view, on the other hand, which would take 21st century Western biblical literalism, which again is a fairly modern idea,
yeah,
that you basically crack open the Bible and read from a 21st century Western perspective these ancient Middle Eastern documents,
yeah,
right? And from, like I say, again, this American perspective.
Yeah, it doesn't work.
And it basically has this kind of magical view of creation.
Yeah.
You know?
And what I tell my congregation, and sometimes it gets me a little bit of hot water, but when I'm preaching, I tell them the Bible's not written to you.
Right.
It's for our benefit, but yes, the Bible is written to real people in real places in real times with a real purpose.
Yes.
So our purpose in reading the Bible is to find out the author's true intent in the setting in which he was writing.
Yes.
So it's not, we want to take off our Western lenses.
Exactly.
And that's why it's important to understand the context of all these books. That's why if anybody's listening and you guys own a good study Bible, those 4 or 5 pages before the chapter starts or before the book starts in your Bible are really, really important because they're going to give you the context of who wrote it, when, why, to whom, and with what purpose.
Exactly, absolutely.
So make sure you spend some time studying this.
So important. In fact, it kind of reminds me of a conversation that I had with a group of students in a biology seminar that I was invited to come and be a guest speaker at. And it was so interesting because at one point in the conversation, the instructor said, all of us here are very concerned about a faithful reading of Scripture. And I said, I'm so glad you mentioned that because a faithful reading of Scripture is hard work. It's not just about cracking open the Bible and reading from a 21st century Western perspective.
Yeah.
You've got to do some work to understand the context, the genre, the purpose, all this sort of thing, in order to really grasp the meaning of it. So, so I could go on and on about this. In some ways, you go back to the Catholic Church, and for many years, the kind of reluctance to have lay people even read the Scripture. And in some ways, you can kind of see where they were coming from, because it's like, the educated theologians know that faithful reading of Scripture takes some work.
Yeah.
And the danger in lay people kind of reading Scripture without understanding what it takes to faithfully read Scripture can be a little bit scary, shall we say.
Yeah, well, it could lead to some, just wrong conclusions.
Yeah.
And actually, I think it probably leads to this illusion of conflict between science and religion, scientism and creationism.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the term that we're using for an extreme view of the 21st, like putting on our 21st century Western lenses.
Exactly.
And just reading the Bible, randomly or just coming to a perspective because of our context, not the context in which the authors were writing.
Exactly.
So that's there is definitely an illusion of conflict. I know just from personal experience that there is. And this leads us kind of to something that another kind of illusion, or at least I think this is why we believe that illusion, is something that Glenn, who called in a little earlier, was getting to. He asked about, isn't it true that most scientists in the world they reject theism? And that's just not true.
Right, exactly. And in fact, it was kind of interesting that his thought was that, or his impression was that the kind of the hard scientists, the physicists and chemists and the ones that are the most empirical might be the first to reject faith. But in fact, the opposite is actually true.
Yeah.
The closer you are to the kind of hard physical sciences, the more up close and personal you are with the information about fine-tuning in the universe, whereas the farther that you get away from that into even the life sciences and, the psychology and sociology, the farther that you are from that kind of hard data, you are less likely to believe.
Yeah.
But overall, the numbers are astounding. I mean, 61% of scientists in America self-identify as Christian.
And that's just Christian. We're not talking about Muslims. We're not talking about Jews. We're not talking about any other religion or just deists or theists.
Or theists. We're not even talking about theists in general.
Yeah.
So those numbers would be even higher.
Yeah. That just goes against the grain of what I've always thought.
Right.
It's great to be able to back that up. And it's based on actually a study, just so our listeners know, by Elaine Howard. Eklund of Rice University. Exactly. So I mean, she's legit. You know, yeah. it's not just like it was published in Christianity Today, but it's a legit study,
exactly,
but done by somebody at a major university,
right.
And the mention of hard scientists believing in God, and I think it has to do with the classical arguments for the existence of God. You know, when you're a hard scientist, you open yourselves up to being able to accept these arguments for the existence of God. And we have a couple listed in front of us. What are they, and which one do you think is the most powerful, or which one do you think we'll be able to explain in the next 10 minutes.
Right. okay, so just to list the four classical arguments at the outset, we've got the ontological argument, the anthropological argument, the cosmological argument, and the teleological argument. So the last two that I mentioned, the cosmological argument and the teleological argument, are the ones probably that relate to science the most. But just to kind of, maybe we could just kind of go over what each one of them are without getting into them, because we've only got 10 minutes
left. Yeah, I would love to hear what you have to say very briefly on the ontological argument, because I've never heard a brief summation of this.
Yeah, so. Yeah. So, right. So the ontological argument was originated by St. Anselm. And it can be described like this. I mean, a lot of people have taken different tacks on kind of describing it. But essentially, anyone who would even consider that God does exist is, in a sense, admitting that there is a God, because part of what we mean when we speak of God is perfect being, and a God that exists is more perfect than a God that doesn't exist.
Yeah.
So if perfection is a part of the concept of God, and if God's perfection implies his existence, then to speak of God as a perfect being is therefore to imply that he exists.
He exists. A maximally great being necessarily must exist.
Yeah,
in order to be maximally great. Just so you, everybody who's listening knows, I never use this argument.
Yeah,
mainly because I don't understand it, and I've read a lot on it.
It's very abstract, and it's very philosophical.
Yeah.
I mean, it's fun to talk about, but you can go all kinds of different ways with it, and you can go down a lot of different rabbit holes.
Yeah, it's a good conversation. If you guys want to have a conversation around the fire with a beer, this is the argument you want to dig into, but there's others. So the anthropological argument for the existence of God.
Right.
What's that?
Yes. So this argument is based on evidence for the human spirit, which differentiates us from the animals, and is evidenced by our quest for meaning and purpose in life. So when we worship, we're able to think abstractly and project ourselves mentally into the spiritual realm. In addition, the moral component to this argument asserts that the universal innate human awareness of right and wrong, also known as moral conscience or natural law, implies a moral creator who put it there.
Yeah.
So these are distinctly human spiritual traits that are said to point to an intelligent, moral, and personal creator. So that's kind of the summary of the anthropological argument.
Yeah, and I actually really like that argument.
I think it's too.
It's a lot of fun. And all right, so let's get down to the cosmological argument and the teleological argument. What are those?
Yeah, so all we're going to be able to do really is to introduce
these
this point. But yeah.
Well, maybe, you know what, after we introduce them, maybe we could offer a few people some resources that
might. Yeah, absolutely. Let's do that.
So what's the cosmological argument?
So the cosmological argument is kind of also known as the first cause argument, which basically says that anything that begins to exist must have a cause for its existence. So this applies directly to the Big Bang model of creation, is that, you know, the universe has not always existed. Therefore, it began to exist. Therefore, it must have a cause for its existence.
Yeah. A Big Bang requires a Big Banger.
Exactly. That's exactly right. And then we've got the teleological argument, which is really the purposeful design argument, that the order and consistency that we see in nature points to a purposeful creator behind it. So that fits in really nicely with the fine-tuning argument that shows that, you know, that the universe is finely tuned for life.
Yeah.
And we could spend a lot of time on that if we had the opportunity. Maybe next month we can come back to that.
Well, I think so. But how about like just with the last, I think we got like maybe 4 minutes, mm-hmm. maybe the next 2 minutes. What are just some brief examples? So you guys, if you guys are listening, take some notes and you can Google these terms. What are some things that are finely tuned?
Okay. So there's a whole long list of them. Within the solar system, for example, if we talk about Earth, let's just bring it close to home. So Earth's location and size, just in terms of its distance from the sun, if the Earth were 1 to 2% farther away from the sun, we'd be in a continual ice age. If it were 4 to 7% closer to the sun, it would be too hot for oceans to exist.
Which means no life.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, you've got to have water in order to have life. Mm-hmm. You have to have liquid water in order to have life. So either one of those, too cold and an ice age isn't going to work, too hot and no oceans is not going to work either.
That's right.
All kinds of things. Again, Earth's size gives us its gravity, the atmosphere that we have, and its temperature. If it were bigger, it would be hotter, and we'd have a thicker, oppressive atmosphere that would contain poisonous gases. If it were smaller, it would be colder, drier, and a thinner atmosphere that didn't have enough oxygen or water vapor in it, which are both life-giving. So we are balanced on a knife's edge.
Yeah.
And all these different characteristics. The list is so long. I mean, I'd love to get into them a bit more.
And it's the idea. It's not the idea that just each one of these by themselves needs to be finely tuned, but it's the idea that every single one of these cosmological constants, every single one of these constants, these physical constants need to be perfectly fine-tuned at the same time.
Yeah.
In order for just life to be possible.
Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly right.
So we have 2 minutes. Okay. So 2 minutes left. What are some resources that you might recommend?
Well, you can grab my book if you want, God of the Big Bang, How Modern Science Affirms the Creator. You can get it on Amazon. You could also go to the ASA website, asa3.org. There are tons of resources there. Sign up, become a member, get access to our quarterly journal, Perspectives on Science and Christian Faith. Every quarter, 4 times a year, this comes out with tons of articles on science and theology.
And if you're like, oh dang, I missed all the previous ones, be confident that you can go on there and you can actually read the previous journals on the website.
Yeah.
So you don't miss out in that way.
Yeah.
And
there are also recorded lectures from previous plenary speakers at our annual meeting. Francis Collins is featured there along with a lot of other people on various different topics in science and faith. So tons of resources at asa3.org.
Yeah, I love that. And I love that you've actually written a book on this. And we're going to have to definitely like pick up where we're leaving off here.
Yeah.
I think this is a lot of fun talking about these things, but cosmological argument, teleological argument, ontological argument, and anthropological argument, all for the existence of God. Science proves God exists.
Well, be careful with that word.
I even did that on purpose. No, so we're just having fun here at apologetics.com radio. For Dr. Wickman, and I'm Jonathan Noyes. It's been a great time with you guys. Thanks for calling in, and I hope this was fruitful for you. And we will see you, next week, but Dr. Wickman and I will see you next month. Have a great night. Get to where you're going safe, and we'll talk to you then. Bye-bye.